This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Let's talk about Nora Helmer. Nora is an unhappy person stuck in a lifeless marriage, and she's dying inside, and she needs out.
Have you thought what people will say?
I can't go worrying about that. All I know is it's something I have to do.
This is outrageous. It's going back on your most sacred duties.
And what, in your opinion, are my most sacred duties?
Well, surely you don't have to ask me that. I mean, your duties to your husband and your children.
I have other duties which are just as sacred.
No, you haven't.
My duties to myself.
Before anything else, you're a mother and a wife.
I don't believe that anymore. I believe that before anything else, I am a human being, just as much of one as you are.
It's not an unfamiliar scenario now, but in 1879, it was unthinkable. Henrik Ibsen's play, A Doll's House, scandalized its audiences, in large part because Ibsen didn't seem to judge Nora Helmer. She doesn't repent tearfully, she doesn't die tragically, Nora just slams the door behind her, and the play is over. Now, well over a century later, Nora Helmer opens that door again. A Doll's House Part 2 is the name of the sequel written by Lucas Naith. It's his first play on Broadway, and it's getting great reviews, including one here at The New Yorker. This is not some kind of postmodern revision of A Doll's House. Naith's play is a really serious, although very funny, reconsideration of Nora and her choices, starring Laurie Metcalf. The New Yorker's Rebecca Mead sat down with Lucas Naith.
So when did it occur to you that this play was something you wanted to revisit and update and reconsider?
I feel like I'd been threatening to do it for about 7 or so years, just talking about it. Because I'd been really interested in writing a play about marriage, writing a play about divorce. When I went to start writing A Doll's House Part 2, one thing that I did is I went online and found the worst translation I could find of A Doll's House Part 1.
What do? Type in worst translation of A Doll's House.
What I do is I go to a website where the background is either like blue or purple. That's sort of a telltale sign. And I cut and pasted the translation into a Word document and went through the play line by line, just rewriting the whole thing in my own words. And something that I found when I read it is that it's a play about a couple who each partner of that couple is so afraid of conflict and upsetting the other that they never have an honest conversation up until the last scene where Nora says to Torvald, "We need to talk," and she tells him really what she's been thinking and what she's been feeling. And I think as I sort of wrote my own version of it, it really just feels like half of a conversation. Torvald doesn't really ever fully respond to her. I don't know that he's in a place to. And it seemed like there's still more for Nora to say as well. And it felt like they needed to have a really big fight.
Also, here's another thing that bothers me. You don't get angry.
Of course I do.
Maybe once you
Right ever... now I feel angry.
Right now you're angry.
You're damn right I am.
No, I don't believe that you are angry, that you're in it, that you're inside the feeling of feeling angry. I think you're just outside of it looking at it like, oh, there's some interesting...
divorce.
Why did you want to write about marriage and divorce?
Well, my mother's been divorced a couple of times. So having watched that happen, that was probably the beginning, probably most definitely the beginning of a fascination with the subject of divorce and the question of how does marriage work? How does a couple possibly stay together? This seems impossible. And And I also feel like a lot of my plays kind of circle around the subject of marriage or coupling. But this is, I think, the first time I took it head on.
Did your mother like the play?
She saw it for the first time on opening night. She noted I took a couple of lines from her.
Which ones are they?
There's a line in there about Nora's talking to her daughter, and they haven't seen each other in 15 years. And the daughter is asking Nora to tell her something that she remembers about her growing up. Nora's stumped by the question initially and then says, well, I remember something. You were born very fast. And we were in the middle of rehearsals, and I had written that exchange, and I needed something for Nora to say back to Emmy. And I got a text that evening from my mother saying, I was just thinking about how quickly you were born. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. I mean, and it actually really is an affectionate thing she talks about. You know, she's sort of linking it to me moving quickly through life or something like that. But I just thought coming out of Laurie Metcalf's mouth, that would be hilarious.
And it is. Yeah. Let's go back a little and explain what the premise of your play is. It's Nora comes back 15 years after she's slammed the door and left at the end of Ibsen's play. And what's the scenario?
Nora's come back because she has a little bit of a problem, which is that she's gone off, lived her own life. She's become a successful writer. And the books that she's writing are somewhat controversial. They're books that do, among other things, encourage women who are feeling trapped in their marriages to leave. She has made some enemies, and there is a judge who has looked into her past and has realized that Nora, who is living as an unmarried woman, is actually still married. So she needs Torvald to go and just clear up the matter, get the divorce certificate filed before some people who really don't like her come after her.
At the time when Ibsen wrote his play, the idea of a woman leaving her family, leaving her husband, leaving her children, was perceived as very shocking, and she was doing it in order to discover herself independently of her family. Is that still such a shocking idea, do you think?
I think it is. I actually assumed it wasn't shocking now. And as I worked on the play, I got to consult with a number of historians and scholars and people like Carol Gilligan, Elaine Showalter, who I sent out a list of questions to them. And one of the questions I asked is, if A Doll's House were written today, what would be the most shocking ending you can imagine today? And everybody I asked answered immediately, oh, well, it's still shocking.
Mm.
And it is interesting that I was surprised by that. People are always leaving families.
Well, people are always leaving husbands, but not necessarily leaving children. That remains an almost singular taboo in a woman's life. As you were dealing with Nora and coming to think about her and imagining her future, did you find her a sympathetic person to be in the company of?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I write, I actually always end up finding everybody kind of sympathetic because I'm always having to be in the position of making an argument on their behalf. And out of all of them, I have to be very careful about this. But if I were to just sort of, on the spot answer, well, who do I most agree with? I mean, easily Nora,
uh-huh.
But that's something you have to be really careful about when you're writing because you end up tipping the scale. And I think where it became a challenge was that I would have certain blind spots in her argument. when people would point out these blind spots, I would end up going back and actually just letting another character point out that blind spot to her face so that she can go back and push harder on her argument.
One of her blind spots is class, isn't it?
Yes.
She talks about the way in which the nanny has raised her and also raised her children, and then blames Anne-Marie for leaving her or abandoning her own child in order to have a working life as a nanny, something which Anne-Marie pushes back at quite vigorously.
After all the problems I've already fixed for you, you want me to fix this too? Is that what you're really saying? Fuck you, Nora! Fuck you! You have zero gratitude. I raised your kids. You should be coming in here. First words out of your mouth should have been, thank you, Anne-Marie. Thank you for abandoning your own life and your own child and raising mine so I can go off and do my little thing.
Yeah, that was a big one that developed. And it came out of, you know, there were early drafts where I just flew by that one. And then that was definitely a case of sitting down with the research, realizing, oh, boy, I overlooked this one. And
I'm fascinated by the fact that you identify most with or find yourself most in sympathy with Nora. What is it about her that links to you? Where are you in her?
You know, my mother, when I was in middle school, went to seminary to become a minister. And at the time, I went to a relatively conservative Christian school. And a lot of my classmates would pull me aside and say, well, you know, your mother's breaking God's rules by, you know, going to seminary. She's not allowed to be a minister. So from a really early age, I was having to defend her. So I think that's probably on the most emotional level why I'm sympathizing with Nora.
I'm wondering, you yourself are not married. You're putting into her words and into the words of other characters your different arguments for or against the institution. Is she the one that speaks most eloquently your attitude towards marriage and the institution itself?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other funny thing where actually of the arguments, I don't agree with those for myself. Personally, I like being just with one person. I don't understand how people date today on the, I'm going to sound old, on the Tinder, like hooking up with different people all the time. Like, I just, how can you do that? How do you have mind space for that? But what appeals to me is actually the reasoning that she's using. Like, I love an argument that's based in reason. Even though I'm a deeply irrational person and I would never take that for myself, that's I most enjoy hearing an argument that thinks about what makes sense versus what feels right. I love the idea that an audience for 10 minutes can be agreeing with one character and then 10 minutes later be agreeing with another character who's saying the exact opposite. I like making plays that are kind of like this thought gymnasium strikes me as being something that's healthy for the brain and healthy for our brains right now, you know, given the current culture that I sometimes fear that there isn't an engagement with long trains of thought.
At the end of Ibsen's play, after that was, and in the 100-plus years since that has been first stage, people have talked about what Nora does when she goes out of the room at the end. And people are going to talk about what Nora does when she goes out of the room at the end of your play, too.
I've already gotten requests for a Doll's House Part 3.
What are your thoughts about what happens to her next?
I don't have any at the moment, you know. I mean, beyond what's said in the play, I mean, she's going off to engage in another battle. It is a play about a character who thinks she has actually changed the world more than she really has. There is a little bit of a bittersweetness in the ending of this play. I like the idea that any ending is actually the beginning of a new play. Unless everybody dies at the end, then it's it's a little harder.
Lucas, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. This was great.
That's Rebecca Mead talking with Lucas Nath. A Doll's House Part 2 is nominated for an armful of Tony Awards, including nods for Best Director, Best Play, and all four cast members.